red deficiency that you had, that's going to get cured real fast. Because there are some things that are worth dying for, ladies and gents. You radical. The system and everything that it touches, it corrupts and it is rotten. We are not here to get the establishment just to run for their money. We are here to change the course of history. In the wars, in the Fed, in the empire. Free people who can contract together without government regulation has been proven to lift the human condition. And we can see it plain as day if we just take off these ridiculous tribal banners. The government doesn't give a damn about people dying.
Unconstitutional for the American people to be saddled with that kind of debt by gunpoint, to have it wasted on bureaucracy. I'm not finished quite yet, thank you.
My mission is to bring people together while preserving the freedom of every individual, regardless of skin color, age, faith, gender, love, and every other nuance which makes us unique. But I was informed that their main interest was liberty, and in this cause, I am doing my very best.
Forgiveness over and over again. Compassion, releasing that. Yeah.
Recognize the corruption.
Yeah.
Cut it the fuck out of your life.
Yeah.
And then...
And keep the lesson of it, but not the trauma of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. That know? Is... That's huge.
Yeah.
So... There's so much with all of this. And I forgot how we even started going down, this road. But when we were talking about coming out and doing this...
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you're headed to Purdue soon. And I was like, hey,
I know.
I got a season here.
I was like, mid-July. I'll be out mid-July. How about this weekend? I, like, I can't come this weekend. How about Monday? He's like, okay, we found the middle ground. And so I got a flight.
Not to be pushy. But
I was like, I'm so excited to come and spend time with you and your family. It's been amazing.
Oh,
it's been the greatest honor.
Humbled.
Pleasure.
Humbled, yeah. To have you here, man. And I've enjoyed it as much as I thought and more. Right,
yeah,
like
me
I was
too.
Like, it's gonna be.
I've been
fantastic.
Blown away, actually.
We, I picked Tom up from the airport, and we've been talking ever since. But, we came out and conducted the ceremony yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Man, go ahead.
It was stunning.
Yeah,
you know, I have regularly transformative experiences. Or I guess I've had a lot of them. Like, I've been through a lot. Like,
right.
And in a good way, a positive way. But yesterday, being with you on the mountain was a deeply awesome and healing experience for me. And a way to kind of bear my soul to you, mm-hmm. in a way that was very freeing and liberating to me.
Yeah.
And in such a sacred place. Like, boy, howdy.
We got some work.
We had some guys come up that were just hiking along the trail, and they were like, well, we want to know all this scientific stuff about it. I was like, man, bro, you don't have to know any of that stuff. He's like, what do you mean? It's like, well, how is all that going to change your life anyway? If you just recognize that you're in this most sacred of places, that should have a greater impact on your life than what Wikipedia says about it.
It's really interesting, because, and I don't fault anybody, because you know,
no,
when you're raised or indoctrinated, mm-hmm. to think analytically,
mm-hmm.
and in their systematic way,
mm-hmm.
there's no space, and there's no space, there's no mention. It's like this, you know, the book in the restricted section of the library that you're not allowed to go to, right? Like, what's in that thing?
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't even know that book exists.
Right.
Right? So right. It's like, well, how do you break through? And but yeah, that was an interesting moment, right?
It was.
We had had one hell of a morning. and I mean this, like, I don't have any mornings that are not one hell of a mornings during these things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just always you go, you sit, you break in, you know, or, you know, whatever terminology you want to use,
mm-hmm.
and then you start to absorb and you start to get the download. Mm-hmm. Maybe if you're uploading, I don't know, sometimes you do.
I don't know. It was just flowing. It was so much flow.
Yeah.
And so easy, and not, it was just us two men that respect each other,
yeah.
out there doing cool stuff, like just really being honest, like really honest about life.
And I really appreciate techniques and practices from other tribes.
Yeah.
Right. I think this is one of the coolest things in the world. Like when you mix and you cross pollinate and you take, you know, the best of things and you maybe start to incorporate them, bring them along, show somebody something new, you know, this ancient, and it is ancient. Mm-hmm. I've seen guys do breath work with instruments before. Mm-hmm. You brought out a flute.
Yeah.
You brought out a harmonica.
It's an amazing harmonica.
Dude, that thing's a monster harmonica.
It's called a tremolo, actually. So it's very different from a blues harmonica.
Yeah.
And they're really beautiful.
I think when I first got to the point where like there's a quiet period, right? Mm-hmm. Like it is dark. It is 4 o'clock in the morning and you are sitting in the middle of nowhere. When you did some of the opening ceremony practices, which yeah. I really enjoyed, by the way.
Yeah. And I highly recommend, like, continue doing those too.
Oh, sure. And the thing is usually I'm doing things like that, okay. right? And my medicine man is also doing things like that. And when you just started doing them, I was like, cool. Yeah. I got an easy time right now, right? And between the... the chant and like the asking for, you know, the spirits and, mm-hmm. and all these kind of things. When you got the mapacho.
Yeah, yeah.
The mapacho is just, clean tobacco.
Jungle tobacco.
There's nothing in it. You don't actually inhale either. But
you can,
you know,
by
you're
the
like,
way.
You, yeah, you could.
You probably didn't want to. In that
I am not that guy. Like, to me and tobacco don't mix. But you know, the cleansing with the smoke and bringing that into it, I was like, man, I have not done this before.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is actually,
I'm going to leave some mapacho with
really
me too.
Good, really cool.
But yeah, I mean, mapacho is, in terms of plant medicines, it was the very first one used by man.
Yeah.
And it is the one of protection. So any plant medicine ceremony, there has to be mapacho there because that's cleaning the people, cleaning the space, cleaning the medicine itself that you're consuming. So it's an essential tool.
Yeah. And usually especially if I'm here alone, cause I'm not, you know, I'm not in, and I guess in line with tobacco, so to speak, where I have like an adverse reaction to it. Mm-hmm. Like I just never done it. And then, you know, and in the way, you know, maybe to describe it to people, it might sound, you know, kind of weird or funny, but you will blow smoke on two people, mm-hmm. right? And when you do that and you're taking in the mapacho, man, like I was like, I gotta keep going. I gotta take, blow, take, blow, take, blow. And it really kind of like, okay, now settle down, right? Like, compose thoughts.
And it's grounding as well. So it is grounding, which is kind of what we need in that moment. And we were actually sitting on the ground too. Yeah. Afterwards, but yeah, it's grounded.
Yeah, there's all these sacred trees out here.
Boy, are there.
I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? You only saw a few of them.
I never knew about these, and I am like...
North Georgia's covered with them.
So in love. They're pointer trees.
Yeah, well, yeah.
That's the name they give them, I guess. But
well, yeah, they point at things, and what I like to call them is touched.
Okay.
Right? Like I
didn't know that.
And, you know, to everybody their own, right? So... this tree was touched probably 400 or 500 years ago and, you know, to sit underneath this thing and have a moment where guys have been intentional over, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10,000 years.
I think it's 10,000.
Oh,
I felt 10,000 out there.
Yeah. Ancient.
Because like, these trees are like, well, how old is this tree? And how long ago was it like altered by man? It's like, well, it doesn't matter. Cause this is the youngest batch of them. Like,
yeah,
like this is probably the 10th generation of trees like this, you know, and humans have been, you know, something like that.
Minimum.
Who knows?
Maybe hundreds.
Maybe
hundreds of generations of trees.
Yeah.
That's a wild thing to say.
Because this place is sacred.
Yeah.
And because this place warranted that level of care and attention.
Yeah. I remember when I started to sit up and we were just getting first light.
Yeah.
And I leaned over to you and I said, hey, this is, you know, I was whispering. I was like, this is when the guys would go out and start like, hey, wake up Shane, wake up Tom, it's time to go hunt. You know, like, you know, back over the time, because, you know, it's, I mean, amazing hunting grounds out there. And
came across some wildlife.
Tell about it.
Man, it was amazing. So we're at this viewpoint, this clearing, and we're overlooking just a beautiful scene. And just down the hill, maybe 40 feet, Shane first hears it, this. And it's a bear, but not a little bear. This is a big, I mean, we have bears up in Colorado where I'm at, but this was 300 pounds or something.
Oh, yeah, at least.
It was like, and he was just right there and eating blueberries in his field, happy. But he knew we were there. For I mean, he could have smelled us. He smelled us probably 3 miles away or more.
And for anybody that's out there, if you ever hear like a, like that out there, a lot of times what's happening is, especially with a bear, they're tasting the air and they're getting it back into the back of their brain and to their olfactory. And I will tell you right now, bears smell about 100 times better than the best dogs, right?
Yeah, they can smell miles and miles away.
It's crazy. They're actually part of the boar family. And most people don't know that. Part of the boar family. And their sense of smell is right up there with, you know, pigs and everything else. So it's incredible. But
the cool thing was we were both very calm about it. I mean, this thing could have turned and just, we'd have been taken out.
No.
I know. I know you're highly trained and you have the equipment to take care of it. But also, it would be a delicate situation at best.
I didn't make the comment I was about to make with you out there. I was like, hey, how fast are you?
Because you don't have to be faster than the bear. You only have to be faster than your buddy.
Yeah. You just got to be the second slowest.
But no, I felt really comfortable and chill with it right there. And you did too. And we were just like hanging out. And like, that's really awesome.
Amazing, right?
Yeah. And we had just been talking about like what it would be like to be eaten by a bear. We had just had this conversation 5 minutes earlier and how it would be.
We have differing opinions.
I was like, what a wonderful way to go out.
Like, I like that you like, man, that's the fun guy talking.
That's a sacred nope. funeral. I was like, there's no formaldehyde involved, no expenses. There's still mourning, I'm sure, but you know.
Oh man, and you know the great thing is you'll still be alive halfway through it.
Well, you can fully experience it.
Woo!
Fully experience it.
God, what a nightmare. I'll tell you what, I'm glad there's not like brown bear around here for that very reason.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I would love to go to some sacred places that have, you know, the brown bear, like up in the Northwest Territories and things like that. But you know, different set of safety going on there.
Yeah.
All right. So
where are we going next?
Yeah, I don't know.
I have something I want to go back to.
Yeah, let's just anytime.
We skipped over something. Yeah. So we talked about Dieta, and then you mentioned, did you also do ayahuasca? And I said yes, but I didn't explain it.
Yeah, let's do that.
So when I went out for Dieta, I flew out to Peru by myself. I know this family of curanderos very well. There's 15 generations of ayahuascaros, so it goes way back. And
ayahuascaros are?
Medicine men, medicine women that serve ayahuasca.
Yeah.
But Enrique, he doesn't call himself that. He calls himself a vegelista, which means a plant medicine person, because ayahuasca is just one of the ones that he uses.
Right.
And for many different reasons. When you go on a plant tour in the jungle with him, he'll be pointing at plants like, oh yeah, this one's Viagra, this one's such and such, this one's for lady problems. Like, it's like there's a plant that kind of does everything, you know? So.
Vegelista. Okay.
So
trying to keep up, man.
No.
So much to learn.
Yeah, you know.
That's good. I like that.
So when I got out there, I'm like, I'm buzzing because I've just left the city and I'm like, I'm about to go out in this thing and I'm like super excited, but my whole like nervous system's just ramped up for this experience. And they could see that. And they knew, don't throw this guy into a tambo right away. He's still got city disease on him.
You know? Shake off that city vibe.
Yeah. So I was in a little hut in the village itself for about 2 or 3 days. Mm. And it just helped my whole nervous system just to relax.
Ground.
It's all okay, man. Just relax. And the first night I got there, we had an ayahuasca ceremony. So just right off the boat, it's like a 2-hour car ride out of the city of Pucallpa. Then you land in a little village. You take a 30-minute boat ride up. If the Boiling River is high enough, you can go up the Boiling River. Otherwise, you have to do a little bit further hike. It's about a 30 to 45-minute hike into the village. And then 2 days, the first night, like, wait an hour, and then you have to, then you get to hop into an ayahuasca ceremony. And it's great because that kind of helps get all those shakes out of you, clear whatever needs to be cleared, get a purge of whatever you're hanging on to, whatever you're there for, get that purge out. And then 2 nights later, I did a second ayahuasca ceremony, and then the next day I went out to the Tambo. So I And then no ayahuasca during that month because you're ingesting this medicines out there. They don't want you to purge those medicines out.
Right.
And then at the end, I had, I think, two more ceremonies also before I went home. And so, and one of them was really cool because it was just Enrique and some local folks. It was like the it was the friends and family one. And I'm like the only Westerner in there. And it was,
That's cool.
That was cool.
I am all about like tailored experiences, man. Yeah. Like I'm kind of an introvert when it comes to that kind of stuff. But like, I would imagine a small, either one-on-one or, you know, two.
Well, that would seem like the case, but that's actually not true. Like smaller, there's eight is okay-ish. Two is kind of too small. But there's something really potent about larger ceremonies.
Energy, huh?
There's an energy. And people say, well, I don't want everybody to see me puke in a bucket. But it's really not. It's actually more anonymous the larger the group is because everybody's going on. It's like, there's only two people. It's like, yeah, you're the one doing it.
You too, buddy, huh?
Yeah, but there's actually a cool energy about a larger ceremony. And the space for that is a maloka. It's a medicine hut. Mm-hmm. And the one they had a smaller one when we first started going out there. But now he's built this 50-foot in diameter, just ginormous, like 1,800 square feet maloka that can fit, Lord only knows how, well over 50 people. And it's never, I don't think it's ever been that much. But he made it really nice to have ceremonies. And it's a grass hut that's huge. It's, you know, it goes up 40 feet in the air.
Wow.
Yeah.
40 feet grass hut.
Yeah.
That's
it's a big hut. I haven't shown, I'll show you pictures of that. Okay.
That's incredible. And I mean, when you get those first two ayahuasca ceremonies, you know, under your belt, you feel like you're ready to go do work then.
Yeah. Like I felt really like if I had hopped off the boat or landed in the village and then gone right to the Tambo, I'd have been just buzzing kind of wacky for a day. Yeah. It was really nice to relax into the jungle vibe.
Decompression.
Yeah, it really was. And it really is. It's actually interesting because that city disease is real. Like, we live inside this buzz inside of cities, but we're so used to it. We don't really, like, our anxiety and all that stuff could just be the buzz of the city you're living in.
Oh, sure.
You know?
It's energy. And if it's the wrong energy, or if it's violent energy, or just psychopathic energy.
Just fear. Like, there's nothing bad going on around you, but you're fearful that it possibly could.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's a psychosis. I mean, in and of itself, for sure.
Yeah.
Huh.
Now, where do you want to go?
Oh, man. We're already hour 5 minutes in.
Okay.
Maybe we'll hit an hour and a half.
Let's go two.
See how it goes.
We do three at home.
Dude, we do three after we're like, hey, man, you need a nap? Well, get a snack first, and we'll just keep talking for 45 minutes.
You can cut this into two parts if you want.
We might have to.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much here that's somewhat maybe new to this audience. I'd like to kind of talk about the after effects of, you know, your take, and I'll obviously provide some of mine, in terms of your interaction with the world, even after some of your first medicines.
Sure.
Because I think this might be the most important. You're like, oh, okay, great. They, you know, people go out and do these things in forest or in groups that are, you know, and maybe have some abstraction about it. But the benefits to not only you, but the people you come in contact with afterward. I think this might be one of the biggest pieces, because, you know, the overarching plan for us, right, is, hey, look, this space that we're in, this revolutionary space of Bitcoin, also needs that evolutionary space of spirit or soul work or species communication protocol,
right?
which I love.
Yes.
Tell me about how it's affected you in terms of interacting with just...
That's an awesome question. So actually, I'll go all the way back to that first ceremony where it was really profound for me. And right after that, for about 3 months, I was pretty manic. I was happier than I've ever been in my life. But I was a bit manic, to be honest. Yeah. I was just a little bit too giddy. And why wouldn't you be? If you'd actually been released from prison.
You shed evil.
Yeah, released darkness. From this darkness. Why wouldn't you be giddy, tripping through little meadows of flowers and stuff? Right. You know, and it was like that. And I got it, and I grounded myself after a while, but I allowed myself this kind of little bit of...
The shine wears off. Yeah.
Well, and the shine was too much, to be honest, but it was a great gift to me, at least. And actually, one of the great gifts of that was that for about 6 to 8 months or so, I had no romantic interest in women at all, and it was the greatest gift of my life. It was the great... I could interact... just wholly from my being in a way that had no agenda towards women or no like looking at her body or any of this stuff. It was like, whoa, you can actually live this way and it's okay. And boy, is it a way better way to live.
Oh my God.
Than being that guy that's always trying to get a glimpse of something. Yeah. Or any of that. Like, wow, the gift of that was beyond belief.
Yeah.
And really helped me in my journey of what I'm doing now, I suppose. A lot of, in the ayahuasca world, there's a lot of integration coaches for aftercare of a ceremony. And we kind of poo-poo on it a little bit because a lot of it seems like, oh, yes, I'm an integration coach. Go ahead and spend $100 a session with these guys. There's a monetization of it. Or maybe there's not, but there's like it's very life coachy.
Sure.
And maybe that's helpful for some people, but maybe it's not also. No. I think the thing... that's really important is walk away and have that, whatever lesson you've learned in a ceremony, really hang on to that as best you can. And something my friend Chris says is this, that I think is rather profound. And we were talking about it yesterday, is your life is a gift from spirit. And the way that you live it is your gift back.
Yeah.
And if you're given spirit a turd wrapped in lipstick, then you may want to reconsider that.
Yeah.
So yeah, really look at how you're living your life. And that's really the whole point. The point of plant medicines is not to have a trip with pretty flowers or lights or dragons or whatever that stuff is. No, it's, hey, bro, wake up. You're a dumb monkey. And we all are. We're primates.
Internally.
We are.
Right. Like this is internally. This is a message to yourself.
Within reconfiguring your body to actually wake up, but not like ascend to a fifth dimension or something. It's wake up to what's really going on. And be very practical in your thoughts, your actions. If you really want to fix something, fix your behavior.
Yeah, man.
You know, and that'll fix so much else.
Yeah.
Your mental interior space, all this stuff.
Discipline in.
Yeah.
And not so much, you know, I get caught up in the word discipline with like military and all, like this is not hard. This is not like in your face. This is a discipline that is that's softer, that is caring, that is loving, that is like just this really powerful thing. And kind of to some of your points is, you know, when you said wake up, you know, maybe some people heard like other people wake up. No. You internally wake up.
Yeah.
And stop worrying about the future. Stop dwelling in the past. Forgive yourself. Forgive, you know, as many people as you possibly can, and start being super present.
Yeah.
And
presence is the thing.
Really, really present. And then the one other thing that I'd maybe add to the after effect in the way, you know, I started seeing other beings in this world was... as one of patience, right? Is like, man, when you've got this military grade psychological like system that just inserts itself into like, let's be honest, like 95% of the people in America probably went to a government indoctrination center as a 5-year-old. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And maybe it's higher than that. I have no idea.
How do you make this thing? Oh, there it is.
There you go. Yeah. That my kids do the same thing. And so, you don't know what you don't know. You don't know what you can't be exposed to. And a lot of, you know, this lower brain activity is always looking at other people mm-hmm. and doing judgmental work, which I'm not against. Like, I'm not going to sit there and say, hey, your brain isn't functioning properly. Your brain's functioning properly. But what's not developed is your prefrontal cortex, where you can actually say, all right, lower brain, I've got the signal that you're sending me about this person. Mm-hmm. Now, how do I take that and do something positive with it instead of negative with it? Because you'll walk around. I know I was like this, especially when I was a Marine. Yeah. God almighty. Dirty, fat, nasty. Like, right. I thought that, like, all the time about people, and that is cancerous, that is toxic. Like,
but it's essential to be a soldier to label the enemy in a way that makes it okay to kill them.
Well, yeah, but like that was how, you know, we talked about just civilian populations. Family, even, huh. Right, dirty, nasty, fat, lazy, you know, like, what it was always mm-hmm. those kind of things. And so, you know, and you're in a culture where you start to really believe, like, those people are that way because they want to be that way. Mm-hmm. And I think what changed in me was, like, look, these people have been not only force-fed a diet of, you know, wrong intelligence, mm-hmm. but they have never seen or know how to escape it. To ask the fundamental questions, to go, I kind of reject this. So you start to look at people, and this is the part I'm getting to, is you look at people with empathy, and you say, you know what, instead of like, hey man, you know, let me introduce you to this. Maybe I can plant a seed. Maybe I can do something for this person mm-hmm. that's struggling with, I don't know, their weight, that's struggling with depression, that's struggling with like finances, whatever they're struggling with. You start to go, how can I help that person rather than tear them apart?
Yeah.
And I think that is for a culture, for a species. If you got a species who's done, you know, plant medicine, that comes out and starts looking at each other that way, especially in a community that is, you know, this Bitcoin community that in years to come is going to hold a lot of power.
Yeah.
You start to say, huh, how are we gonna take this? How are we gonna steer all this power that could corrupt? How are we gonna take this power and start to do more good as a species?
Absolutely. And we haven't talked about Bitcoin, but that's another deep passion of both of ours.
It's secondary. Like,
well, I don't know. It's a thing.
It's secondary integration, right?
It's this. We've been born into this fiat world, as we call it. And we don't, it's almost impossible to even see it because we're a fish in the water trying to understand what water is. Yeah. And right. The water is this fiat system. Like, of course banks are great. Of course banks are the place to put your money. Of course banks are safe. Of course you invest money in stocks because companies are the best thing ever.
Right.
And Bitcoin promises so much more of just, holy mackerel, we have a money that's actually not controlled by any human, no person. And the corruption is this: if you are allowed, if you personally are the person who is allowed to print money for free,
yeah,
and everybody else has to work for it, that's slavery. Yeah. And if you're in that position of power, no matter how holy and spiritual a person you are, for how long will you not corrupt that? A day, a week, a month, a year, but eventually you're going to be, you know what? I need some new stuff. I'm going to print me some more money, and these suckers are going to take it and use it. Well, and Bitcoin kills that.
Yeah.
I mean, it changes that.
As soon as you can use money to use force and coercion.
Yeah.
To whatever your ends are.
All of history.
Yeah, all of history. Is like, now you've corrupted it. Now there's corruption. And, you know, as soon as you debase or inflate, that's also corruption, because what you've done is now just sacrifice somebody else's time.
And it's happened to every currency in all of humanity.
Yep.
Yep.
Minus one.
Minus Bitcoin, precisely.
Golly, how profound is that?
It's super duper profound.
Yeah.
It's, mind-boggling, and I can't believe I was born into the time that it came about.
I know.
Like, when I read history, I was like, dude, it would be so cool to be back in history at that time when that thing went
on.
I
always thought that, too.
Too bad I missed out on the best parts of history.
But sure.
I'm sorry.
Maybe not.
We're living in one of the best times of history, and there's going to be some crap that comes down. Like, this isn't going to just unravel so gracefully and peacefully, and everybody's gonna be happy and go lucky, and
sure,
we're gonna be dancing in fields of poppies or whatever. It's no, there's gonna be some shit that's coming this way.
It is.
But this is the first time that we've had a tool that can change all that, an open, fair network that's available to everyone on Earth, regardless of where you live, who you are, what you believe, and anybody can join with a computer and internet connection, or a cell phone and a computer connection, and it's open to everyone, and it's unconfiscatable by governments or other people. It's a safe way to store it. And the longer you hold on to it, the more value it creates that you can pass it on, not just to your children and grandchildren, but your grandchildren's grandchildren's grandchildren.
And culturally, what's really interesting to me about it is what's already happening in the global South, especially.
Yes.
I mean,
stunning.
And I mean this as charity. Like, I mean, this is literally proving the point.
It's not charity. I would say it's
investment.
No, I wouldn't even say that. I would say that it is a form of aid to all people on Earth that doesn't require a government to initiate it or rules to enforce it, that is actually self-reinforcing through the rules that are encoded within a piece of software called Bitcoin.
That is more poetic and way longer than charity.
That was off the cuff, too.
It was good. I like that. But to see these guys that are working, that are identifying problems, like, what is it? Alex Gladstein's got a new book coming out talking about the IMF and how they have absolutely impoverished through,
the IMF, the World Bank.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're going to help other countries. No, we're going to enslave other countries to debt that they can't afford for projects they don't even want.
And when they can't manage their debt because we've inflated away any value inside of that tiny economy, and we print $1 trillion, which absolutely destroys their tiny economy in dollars, then they get restructured. And when they get restructured, they owe more money over a longer time.
Absolutely.
And you're like, what are we doing here?
The entire system's based on debt and can only survive through the creation of continued debt until it collapses.
I mean, we've done this. China's done this. China's doing it as well as we are. You know, the crown has done it over the course of history. This has been done over and over and over. The IMF is one of those things. But, I mean, besides Alex Gladstein, you've got, all of these different projects that have popped up where people are taking hydropower over to Africa, which they have an abundance of great rivers. Mm-hmm. And it's, places where you can turn something, throw on Starlink, and then all of a sudden you have a little economy that can't be manipulated anymore.
I mean, it's wild what they're doing. So they're coming into these villages in Africa and saying, hey, we want to build a micro hydro power plant here.
Yep.
And here's our offer. We're going to provide it, and then we're going to take 60% of that power and mine Bitcoin with it to pay for the whole project.
Right.
And 40% goes to the villages around here that have never had power before. And the difference between poverty and having a security inside your village is power.
Hell yeah.
Power. And so, there's no government that's funding it. There's no corruption that's being skimmed off the top, as that always happens in these situations.
Right.
And there's nobody that's telling, like, there's no charity that has to be raised to do this. It's actually economically incentivized by Bitcoin itself.
Yeah.
And it's environmental.
I mean,
all these things.
when you're looking at hydro power, where there's never been power, stranded energy.
Yeah.
And I think that's like one of those pieces that a lot of people don't understand is, like, stranded energy. If you can take Bitcoin and you can move it into a place and now create energy and mine Bitcoin with that energy, now what you're talking about is moving energy over time and space as efficiently as possible. And if you're looking at, hydro or flare gas, now what you're talking about, and I think Bitcoin's somewhere probably north of 65% now, but 65% of every, block that is ever mined every 10 minutes is done with a with a non, you know, carbon base, which
it's hard to estimate, but it's somewhere. Yeah, and it actually, in some ways, it doesn't actually matter.
I don't think it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. When somebody described there was some old guy that recently described the amount of, you know, carbon dioxide that's put into the atmosphere by human beings in the planet. And it's like, what are we freaking out about? Like,
yeah.
Of all the geological events and everything else, humans produce the least amount of any part of the carbon that's, and you know, I am going to be that person that also says, hey, we should be cleaner. We should pick up our shit.
Yeah,
and
for
we
sure.
should start using better materials, which I think as fiat dies and fiat mm-hmm. government dies,
right.
the restrictions on things like hemp, where you can start yeah. making biodegradable plastics, where, you know, instead of having, you know, whatever it is, the size of Texas floating, you know, a plastic nonsense over there in the Pacific. Well, you know, eventually that's going to biodegrade. It's probably going to take the...
Well, it's a bio island now. There's actually life living there, plants growing and stuff. It's actually a floating island.
Crazy.
It's crazy. But so one of the things about this is low time preference, high time preference. And mm-hmm. so the fiat world is high time preference. That it is foolish to save money with the US dollar.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you are storing that, it's melting away in your bank. So the smartest and rational thing to do with that is spend as quickly as you can on cheap goods as fast as you can. This is the fiat world. Bitcoin is, hey, if you have this thing and you hold on to it for your whole lifetime and your kids do too, they're going to actually have abundance and an optionality with their lives as to what they do with it that's immense. You're no longer this barely scraping by and never be able to afford a home thing, that suddenly everything you want to purchase has to be durable. It has to be worth giving up that Bitcoin for.
We're
not throwing away stuff. And we aren't having things like, I see homelessness going away. That actually there's more care and concern in the world of building a world that's actually just in balance with nature.
When a technology comes along that incentivizes a people to that type of living, the non-throwaway culture, the craftsmanship, the artisanship, mm-hmm. the like make things last again, like mm-hmm. that changes culture too.
Immensely.
And then to think about, all right, we start getting rid of a lot of regulation because they just can't keep it up, right? And we're not talking about the regulation that, you know, hey, listen, don't pour your toxic waste in a river. Right. We're talking about the regulation that encumbers cheap, affordable energy.
Right.
And that's the thing, you know, you go back to Nikola Tesla, and Nikola Tesla's like, yo, hey, man, there's energy everywhere. Let me show you guys some stuff. You start getting rid of the patents. You start getting rid of all these, you know, fallacious things that they do for, you know, the well-connected out there to keep mm-hmm. money in their hands and power in their hands. And you're like, okay, now, you know, instead of, you know, your kilowatt hour costing, you know, whatever, $3, and, you know, now you're talking about 3 cents.
Yeah.
That, the use of cheap electricity for the human species to use more energy is not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing. And I think part of this fiat system's made us believe that energy is a zero-sum game.
They have to.
I know. So,
yeah.
So all the energy we have on Earth is all that we will ever have on Earth. And it like discounts completely the ability of humans to innovate and produce better ideas. And so since the 70s, we haven't had any nuclear power plants in this country. And we've been told as children, I'm even indoctrinated into these schools, nuclear power is dangerous and horrible because this waste is going to last 10,000 year half life, and there's nothing to do, so we're screwing all of our future generations if we do it. And we haven't figured out a better way to do it. Well, somebody along the way figured out these SMRs, small modular reactors,
right?
And it's using the waste of the big nuclear plants as the fuel for these things.
U-233.
You know more
than that. Uranium-233, man. And this is a beautiful thing. Yeah. What's really interesting is like you commented and said something to the effect of like, we haven't built nuclear power plants since like the 1970s in the United States. And with those old Gen 1s, mm-hmm. you know, the radioactive isotope half-life was, I don't know, 10,000 years or
something,
whatever,
like that, yeah.
Which is crazy. The spent fuel, the U-233, the spent fuel from the Gen 1s, that can be applied to these SMR small units, you know, you run an area. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Listen to that. It's going, hey, you guys are done.
Right? Is it really?
Yeah, it really is. It's crazy. Stop. Get out of here. I set it at 1:30 as a reminder. And okay. I was like, we'll just keep going.
We got another hour. It's okay.
Another hour? That's funny.
No, we can do less.
I'm going to take you to the airport at some point today.
That's true.
With what we're talking about, I think even yesterday, is the U.S. government's actually selling U-233 that you could use in these SMRs to China.
What a great idea.
Oh, I mean, wait. Is it,
nothing I bad mean, about that I, at all.
Maybe it came from Nancy herself. No, I doubt it. She might not be clever enough for that. But yeah, I mean, we're literally taking, they know the technology that we need. China, obviously, like, why would we sell this to China? Because there's a giant profit and they're doing something amazing with it over there. Yeah. Crazy.
It's crazy. And I guess the other point I'm thinking about in all of this also is what the fiat system has incentivized not developing that technology.
Oh, sure.
Because if they had, what would happen to these oil companies? What would happen?
Well,
if we had abundant power that is cheap and we no longer needed,
you'd still have abundant. You would have abundant oil, which means really cheap oil.
Yeah,
yeah,
that yeah,
yeah.
There's some nation states and companies that wouldn't be happy with that.
I mean, Saudi, the Kingdom,
Russia,
UAE,
United States of America.
Yeah, but those guys would also still have extremely cheap energy.
Right, but that's a fiat. I mean, they wouldn't want that because that doesn't control the system of people.
Yeah, so. It's funny. I think a lot of times I think about, like, well, what's going to happen here? What's going to happen in the United States? You know, the United States has a potential to be really awful, really kinetic, and terrible. Mm-hmm. But it also has that flip side because there are 500 million guns here in America. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's 500 million. So,
okay.
When you actually look at the projection of power, like, you know, Jason Lowry talks about, mm-hmm. the projection of power onto the American people is a lot of times a non-starter, especially if you've got people who are in, you know, citadels here in the mountains in, you know, rough terrain.
Yeah.
Or, you know, let's
anywhere in the South.
Well, not only, yeah. and then, you know, from a guy that's gone house to house in cities, if they think that they're going to go into cities, I mean, are you kidding me? Are you going to go in? You're going to go into Chicago?
I think they're just going to build walls around the cities.
No way.
There's a thing called megacities. You should look this up. I haven't talked about this, but it's basically they want to create these megacities. They just lock them in, and it's just you've actually contained the population within a city. I know it's dark, and it sounds conspiracy theory, but this is a thing that came out by the government. I don't. 10, 15, 20 years ago.
So we're close.
We're not getting farther from it so far.
Oh, man. But when I say that, you know, like I look at it probably through an American lens. You know, I haven't really considered, you know, Bitcoin, what it's going to unlock and unfold in the years to come in places like Saudi, in places like Russia, in places like UAE, maybe India for that matter, China, like, and to see the potential,
it's huge.
It's dark huge. Too.
It's dark. There's this. I believe that everyone will join Bitcoin at some point.
Yeah,
city at all levels, from individuals to nation states and everything in between, and that's actually a good thing.
Yeah,
even the most awful and evil empires on the earth, which I consider North Korea to be the worst in terms of the way they subjugate their people to quite
a bit of
awfulness. Yeah, but
China's got the Uyghur thing going on.
Yeah, but if they're locked out of the world financial system, then really their only safe place for them to go is Bitcoin, which means that they'll have to start mining it, which means they're securing an open, fair network for all people on Earth. So even this evil country actually starts engaging in a benevolent act to mankind, and it could potentially change how that whole thing goes down over there.
Yeah, I mean, if they want to participate, the rules are the same.
They're welcome to the game, and eventually everyone will join, and you get the price you deserve.
I tell you what, man, that is one of the best parts of our cult. you get Bitcoin at the price you deserve. I think that is really it's a great way to, hey, you know, later it might be, you know, 60, 70, 80, a million, whatever.
I mean, I think in our lifetimes, it'll always be a good price.
Man, yeah, you know.
I really believe that. Even if Bitcoin goes to $1 million per Bitcoin, sure, in our life, it'll still be a good buy.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
because you're actually still destroying your energy into a system that's going to keep increasing in value.
Yeah. Deflationary money.
Yeah.
Incredible. What else, man? What else we need to cover in this short term?
I can talk a little bit about in Colorado, what we have going on up there, actually. So, okay. Well, I want to talk about down in Peru, if you're interested in what I was talking about down there, there's Sanctuary of Huistin. It's Sanctuario, Huistin. Okay. And you can find, they have a website on there, and it's Enrique Paredes, Paredes. He's an amazing maestro. If you are looking for a safe place to go in South America to do ayahuasca, I can highly recommend them. They're of the greatest care. They have amazing facilities and just an amazing place to go.
Cool.
And, you know, you have to be careful. So that's a recommendation I have for that. We have a place, 100 acres in Colorado up in the mountains. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Seen pictures.
You're going to be out there sometime soon. And we call it Montaña Sagrada, Sacred Mountain. And we don't have a website. We're kind of
flying under the radar.
Whatever. But Montaña Sagrada of Colorado on Facebook, you can find us there. And you know, we do cacao ceremonies and things like that there. And we just help people get through stuff. You know, so if you're feeling that need, reach out to us there.
Tell everybody how, not a website, email?
Oh, email. Yeah, my email, my direct email.
Yeah.
I won't get any spam, I'm sure.
TomTaber.com.
No, it's TOM_TABER@yahoo.com. And then we're also having this thing I'm going to announce right now for the first time.
Of course you can.
Oh, well, thank you. We are having a Bitcoin campout of sorts up on our place. It's called a Bush Bash. And this was started in Australia by these great guys called Wizard of Oz, A-U-Z on Twitter, and Hodalon Comrades on Twitter as well.
Yeah.
And these guys just kind of got together in COVID and said, we need to get together and have a campout. And there's going to be two of them at first. And then actually 20 people said they want to come, and then 40 people showed up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
And it was off the cuff. Everybody brought their own stuff, their camping gear, their food provided for themselves. And then they had a space that people could just stand up and give presentations on Bitcoin. And then there's a whole bunch of socialization. Super cool.
Exactly what they needed in Australia during that time.
So we're going to be doing that in late August, August 18th and 19th. And if you want to find out more about that, follow me on Twitter, which is @TomTaber_. So @TOMTABER_. And follow me there, and there will be an announcement there.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Tom also is part of a podcast that I have started listening to.
Yes, thank you for listening.
Wide Awake in Babylon?
It's called Wide Awake in Babylon with Chris Douglas, my dear friend. And we talk about consciousness. We talk about plant medicines. We talk about society quite a bit. We occasionally talk about Bitcoin. And we usually have like a three-hour format. And we have friends that come by and join us in conversations as well. And it's quite interesting.
It's deep. It's got some great stories in it. There are, you know, to see paths of other people who have come to some of this realization of this forgotten and prohibited plant medicine practices and the glue of humanity, if you will. It's really interesting to see how everybody else gets there, and that podcast is great. Do you want to mention maybe your future endeavor coming up here soon?
I'm going to actually unfurl a Bitcoin podcast because, as Walker says, we don't have enough Bitcoin podcasts.
Yeah, right.
From the crypto couple.
But
it will be actually a Bitcoin podcast that's a bit different from all the others.
And, bit different?
A bit.
That'd be a great name for...
That was an accident. I'm so sorry.
That's cool.
But it's actually called Spirit of Bitcoin. And so we'll be talking about plant medicines and Bitcoin, kind of like this conversation we just had.
Sure.
And go deep with people and their own experiences around both those things.
Man, and that's, I got to tell you, you know, we've been talking about this a little bit. We talked about it yesterday when we were out on the mountain, like, you know, that the going out and stepping into a more of a public role for people. Man, it's not an easy thing to do.
It's
so,
not.
And actually, kudos to you.
No, kudos to you, actually. Because I've like... I